You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
And welcome to the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast, an American podcast about Canadian professional football. I'm Oz Davis. I'll be co-hosting the show. Joining me, as always, or almost always, is my co-host, Dr. Rouge. Doctor, how are you this week?
My team is not doing well. They're 3-8. They are not going to defend the Grey Cup championship. But otherwise, you know, life is good.
Okay, yes, we're still here. We're still podcasting. The Argos.
But did I tell you my team stinks?
You mentioned that once already. Should we have a little meter going for this episode? How many times you mentioned that? Because I think it may come up a few times.
My team might be worse than your team.
Wow. I think.
But there's a difference, of course. There is still the reality that I've won more Grey Cups than you.
My team is bad enough. This decade?
I think so.
Yes. This millennium? This century? I wonder if my team is so bad it's not making our prospective starting quarterback sick.
This is true.
Ostensibly, he's had stomach flu for 3 days, but all we know is that he's been vomitous. And we don't really know why. The official reason? Stomach flu. In any case, we'll come back to Johnny Canadian Football in just a moment. But let me welcome our other co-host, the stalwart of the show, the man who never misses an episode, Joe Pritchard, returned from Winnipeg. Joe, how are you?
My team stinks. They're 5-7. They're on a 4-game losing streak. They're not going to win the Grey Cup this year. I mean, wow. I figure I might as well join in the pity party with the rest of you guys, right?
Well, how about it? How about it?
Collectively, our teams have 11 wins. Calgary alone has 9.
I mean, this is going to be awesome. We have 1/3 of the Canadian Football League fan bases covered, and we might be the 3 teams to lose. To not
our 3 teams might not make the playoffs.
Right, that'll be amazing. Fun show in November.
Well, we can all repick teams for the playoffs. That'll be great. That'll be great.
This
fun.
Is true.
Right. Okay. But Joe, we would like you to tell us first about your trip to the Banjo Bowl. Now, I know you didn't get the final result that you wanted, and I know that you're bummed out and you believe that your team stinks, and we can all have a pity party again later. But how was the trip? Tell us about your trip. Tell us what happened. And what you did, and how was your game experience, and etc.
Well, it was great. I mean,
interception number one.
Yay! So Friday night,
there's interception number two.
Wow, they're coming
yep.
quick.
So Friday night, about a month ago, my flight got bumped back 2 hours. So instead of landing in Winnipeg at 10 p.m., it was more like midnight. So that was a great start. But that was probably the worst thing that happened to me on the entire trip besides the game. So
entering the game now, Chris Streveler.
Did you?
I could work.
I'll stop, Joe.
Okay. One of the things that I'd like to know is, let's talk about the game experience first. So how are your seats?
They were good. There's really only a few sections in that whole stadium that don't have great seats or great sight lines. And all the upper deck seats, great sight lines, fantastic. The worst ones are in the end zone corners. My buddy actually had season tickets there the first year down there, and those are more expensive than the upper deck seats he has now. So he made the switch gladly and keeps moving down a little bit each year, and hopefully he'll be near the front of the upper deck soon. But there's no bad seat in that house besides the end zone corners.
Right. You did mention this last week, so that's great. Let me ask you this one. We kind of commiserated a little bit about the, you know, $12, $13, $14 beers and whatnot at pro stadiums these days. How is the food there? Did you eat anything? Did you drink anything?
I had a hot dog, and that took far longer than it should have, and they didn't even have the regular-sized dogs in the middle of the third quarter. So I hear more horror stories about the concessions there than I should relay, because I've only had the one experience, because last year I basically glued myself to the seat and didn't move. This year I actually got up. At halftime, they have a little outdoor section that's fenced in that you can wander around just to stretch legs.
Okay.
Buy cheaper beer if you feel like it, but given it's Budweiser, it doesn't really classify as beer. The hot dog was really the only experience I had there, and yeah, that wasn't the best.
Really? Budweiser is the primary beer they serve there? Not even like Labatt's? I mean, not even like...
In that outdoor section, that's the only thing that was available. Okay. There are a few craft spots available in the stadium, but they're not the ones, they're not the easiest to get to from most seats, because they're smaller, they're not as spread out as the, here's a $11 Budweiser or whatever it was, because I would, the heck if I was going to buy that. The best place to get a drink, if you can get to the front, is Rum Hut, of course.
Ah,
mm-hmm.
Okay, great, great. Now, last week you said, and I'm going to turn it over to the doctor in just a second, but last week you mentioned that your alcohol consumption post-game might depend on the result of this game. Now, this was quite a roller coaster game. This was quite a nerve-wracking game, kind of an emotional, tumultuous game for a Blue Bomber fan. How much did you drink after the game? True confession.
Not enough to get in any sort of serious trouble, but I did feel it the next morning. How about that?
Oh, okay. All right. So, yes, you did do your punishment, your self-inflicted punishment. Yes. Okay. I got one key question about the whole experience after this. But, Doc, do you have any more questions about the in-game experience for Joe?
I should know the answer to this question, Joe, and for some reason I've forgotten it. This marks for you how many trips to the Banjo Bowl, and you have now been to how many current CFL stadiums?
Okay, so that's my second trip to the Banjo Bowl, back-to-back games. As far as current CFL stadiums go, I have been to IGF, of course. I've been to BC Place, I've been to Hamilton, and I've been to BMO. Let's see, I'm just trying to think if I missed any. I don't think so, because four of the game experiences I've had happen to be in stadiums that no longer exist.
Mm-hmm. Best food, then, of the current stadiums you visited? In stadium food, obviously.
To be honest, I am not a huge concession guy, so I'm the worst person to ask. The only reason I even had that hot dog is because the only thing I had before that was it for throughout the entire day was a Tim Hortons double double and a breakfast sandwich. So that's all I had. And we're looking at about 4 o'clock. We're probably not going to eat until 7, 8 o'clock that night because, you know, get out of the stadium, get to the place, wait for the Rider fans to show up, that kind of thing. So it's like, I need something and my team is pissing me off. So let's go grab a hot dog.
Now maybe you shouldn't have gotten a double, double, double. In any case, actually, a thought did occur to me. So I guess it's true that when you get hung over in Canada, you get hung over in real life too, right?
Okay. Yes, I've also heard that if you die in Canada, you die in real life
as
well.
Right, right. I was kind of wondering if a similar experience also translated to real life as well. One final question, and this is always a question that interests me about going to sporting events in cities and whatnot, because I used to do this especially a lot when I was living in Europe. How is Winnipeg? What do you do in Winnipeg for fun? Is there anything to do? Do you hang out? Is the bar scene any good? What's good to do in Winnipeg?
We did enjoy the bar scene after the game with some of the people from the Piffles podcast bus, including Steve, Greg, and Alex were all there, and Amy as well. A few others that were on the bus came with them because we picked a place to have our post-game meal right across the Trans-Canada Highway from where they were staying on purpose, of course, so they could come meet up. Pre-game, I met up with John Hodge from Blue Bomber Talk and Robert Dalton from Rouge Radio. Very cool. That we did last year as well and enjoyed it. So this year we spent an extra hour doing that.
Wow.
Enjoyed that. So that was pretty much the extent of the socializing aspect was Saturday. Gosh, I'm trying to remember what we all did then. Sunday was, we actually went to the Human Rights Museum on Sunday. That is a place where you alternate between being very, very pissed off and very, very sad, sometimes in the same minute. Mm-hmm. But I believed it was a very important experience, so I'm glad I got to go. And we did spend a little bit of time in that area called the Forks, which the museum is in. And I did pick up my wife a gift from there. That's her favorite part of Winnipeg is the Forks area. So I was able to drop in and grab her a little bit of a present for putting up with my trip. And then Monday, that's the day I set aside for shopping and raiding the bomber store. And I even went to a used bookstore to see if I could find some treasures. And I did come up with a few of those too.
Good stuff.
All right. Well, Spill, what'd you get? What books did you get? What gear did you get?
So I got a whole mess of bomber gear. That's the reason that I picked Monday for the bomber store visit instead of last year. I got in earlier on Friday. And we went straight there from the airport.
Okay.
Bad idea because then I didn't know how much I had left to spend and still stay within budget. So we made a second trip on Tuesday last year. Monday last year. So this year we just said Monday and then I'll know. And I actually went under budget somehow. Let's see. I'm just pulling it up here. I grabbed a nice hoodie, not bunny hug hoodie, two bomber t-shirts, and I got my little one a few onesies for next season. So we're set there. Mm-hmm. At the bookstore, as far as CFL treasures go, I found True Blue, which covers the 84 Grey Cup season.
Oh, wow.
And I also found Goodbye Argos by Leo Cahill from the 70s.
Wow.
So those are two things I was not going to run into in the States, so that's why a bookstore got on list for things to do up there.
Great. Wow. Awesome. Fantastic. Well, you got your money's worth. But I wonder, too, you say you bought your son a onesie for next season?
Actually a three-pack. They're 24-month-old as far as the size goes. He'll probably be in that size by the time next June rolls around, though.
Oh, okay. So you've already given up on this season.
Well, he's already got stuff for this season. He'll be growing out of it probably by November, but I didn't want to buy something that he grew out of by the end of the year.
No, I didn't. I just wanted to get you to commit to how sucky your team was, because you're losing in the competition of Dr. Rouge right now for this show. Right, let's
Oh, we haven't gotten to the actual game yet.
No, that's true. That's true. Let's take a look at some players and some teams who might be a little bit more to be optimistic about than a certain two or three other teams we could mention. A few roster additions this week. We are taping this show on the 12th of September. And we'll probably be releasing that on the 13th of September, a Thursday. But this week we've had a couple of roster additions. These are, wow. How about this one? The Tiger Cats added Chad Owens and Marque McDaniel, who somehow is still out there, in lieu of Jalen Saunders, Shamwad Chambers, and Chris Williams, some of whom have been recently given up on, some of whom who have been given up much earlier in this season. But still, this team already has Brandon Banks and Luke Tasker. Now, we'll talk about them in a bit more detail later, but apparently these guys are good for 250 yards and 3 touchdowns per game. With these additions, I'm feeling much better about my pick of the Tiger Cats in the Grey Cup. How afraid are you, Joe?
Afraid of what?
Of these Tiger Cats. Look at, I mean, that's a pretty good first four in the receiving core now, isn't it?
Sure, but that would imply that the Bombers have anything to lose to them besides the first crossover playoff game at this point.
Nah, I'm just saying it's all. I think this is a pretty scary offense. I'm saying this is a pretty scary offensive machine right now, even if I'm not as much of a stat believer as some of the Tiger Cats fans are. You like these moves, Doc? These are necessary moves, right?
Yeah, I both like them, and I think they're necessary. I think what they give you is, you know, Chad Owens is sort of the cheerleader, but he's also, you know, he's one of those guys who's going to almost be like an extra coach on the field in terms of making sure guys run routes properly, make sure that they're working in the locker room, make sure they're working during the practice week, etc. And, you know, I mean, we know what McDaniel can do. We've seen him year in and year out, you know, in a Calgary uniform. And so I think what he brings is that sort of championship pedigree, you know, to that roster. I agree with you. I like both moves. You know, I still am not convinced that top to bottom Hamilton has the best receiving core in the CFL. I don't know if that necessarily matters. But saying that, both of these guys make that offense even just a little more dangerous. And right now with, you know, with Ottawa apparently not being able to figure out, you know, what 20 points actually means, who knows? Hamilton might take over first place and this time not give it up.
Yeah, you're right. It might not matter because everybody's been talking about Mr. Masoli's monster stats this season, about his 300-yard games, how well he's done in the numbers game. And, you know, he's been doing this with various receivers all year, mm-hmm. so it may not matter. However, as of late, those two have been monsters in Hamilton, and they don't need more than two or three catches and a few decoys out of Chad Owens for the rest of this season, really. So nice add there, I think. Again, you've got to like the Hamilton Tiger Cats to be in first at the end of this side of the table by the end of the year. Right, BC Lions also added. We talked about this a little on last week's edition of the Rouge, Red, and Blue. Devere Posey, he for a little while was working out with the Baltimore Ravens, but came back to Canada. How about also we can talk about the Argos, your team, Dr. Roos, your great team, your defending Grey Cup champion. The Toronto Argonauts added linebacker Jeff Knox Jr. He played for a couple of years with the Riders before this offseason, getting looks from Tampa Bay, Washington, and Tennessee. Do either of these moves make a big difference, Joe?
I like the Posey move in BC because BC actually has something to play for now.
I guess
Toronto, I don't know if that's going to be enough to stem the tide. I did see some Rider fans kind of poo-pooing the Jeff Knox move, but that's the kind of thing you'd expect when you're thinking you're going to get a guy back and then he goes somewhere else.
Right.
So I'm not going to put too much stock into that, but I can't see that hurting them, but I don't know if that's going to be enough to help them get back on their game either.
Right. BC Lions has made a habit in recent years of backing into the playoffs, usually at about 7-11 record. And it looks like it almost looks like the stars are aligning for that to happen again this year. Doc, you're not too excited about Jeff Knox joining the Argos?
I'm not sure it's so much Jeff Knox in and of himself as something that Joe just mentioned, which is I'm not sure Jeff Knox is really going to make that big a difference.
Right.
You know, you're looking at a defense that's given up 30 or more points in 5 of the past 7 games. You know, there is no reason to believe that one guy is going to turn this around. You know, it has been a monumentally disappointing season. And yet in some ways, maybe not, because, you know, as we were saying a little bit earlier, you know, 2 years ago, 5-13, last year, 9-9. But let's face it, they were at one point, if I remember right, 5-8. And I think they just got hot at the right time last year. Mm-hmm. And this year is shaping up to be obviously another losing record. So, you know, as we look for reasons why, you know, well, the fans aren't turning up and the fans aren't there and the fans aren't there. Well, in reality, it hadn't been a really good team to see, quite honestly, over the past 3 years, except for about a 1 month stretch where they got hot and they got lucky. And you know what? When you get hot and you get lucky, sometimes you win games you shouldn't win. They did last year, and they obviously won the game that absolutely mattered.
Right. Okay. Well, let's talk BC Lions. Let's go into last week's games. BC Lions played in that first game, which I don't know, couldn't have surprised too many people. I mean, yeah, I picked Ottawa in this game. I picked the tie in this game. That's right. Didn't you also mm-hmm. have Ottawa in this game, Dr. Roosh?
Unfortunately.
All that's hurt is your pride, really.
Here's the thing. On one level, we should not have been surprised that Ottawa lost the game. I mean, on the one hand, they played down to the competition. It was a long road trip, a late start for them in terms of body clock and all of that. But, you know, they had laid a tremendous egg the week before, and my thought was they were going to come out and sort of make a statement. And, yeah, they made a statement. It was just a really rotten one. And as much as there are questions directed at, you know, the quarterback situation in Winnipeg, you know, let's face it, another bad week out of this offense coming up, and suddenly it's going to be, you know, wait a second, just exactly what does Ottawa have here, you know, both short term and moving forward. On the other hand, BC, you know, they've been under the radar all season. They could steal a playoff spot. And, you know, you were joking at 7-11. If they somehow make it to 8-10, they're probably going to make the playoffs.
No, 8-10 is in question. Look, here's the way it works, right? Guess what? BC wins another late night home game, right? This season, they're 4-1 in those games. They're 0-5. Mm-hmm. They're 0-5 in everything else. Okay? They got two more of these things. One of them, granted, is in the last week of the season against Calgary. But, on the other hand, Calgary might have nothing to play for. So that mm-hmm. could also be a win. All right? So let's put them at 6 wins based solely on the BC late season, late night home games. They could win one more, maybe against Toronto in week 17 at home. I like that. Mm-hmm. That's an afternoon game. Maybe Montreal. They got Montreal once more. I don't know if they're going to win this week. So they could probably win 7 games. There's your path.
They get to eight. I think they're in. They get to 7. Might be a little tricky. But, true. I mean, unless, you know, and here's the thing. You look at what BC's record is capable of, you know, 7-11 or 8-10. And let's face it, the bottom might fall out in Winnipeg. It appears the bottom has fallen out in Toronto. And I'm still not convinced that Montreal is going to be the kind of team that's going to put together a streak at the end of the season to get them in the playoff. Who knows? 7-11 might be enough, which is really an embarrassment if that's the case.
Well, not completely unheard of. Not completely insane either. The official website on this game attributed the whole thing to the Lions roaring defense, and you know why not? Odell Willis, 3 sacks in the game. 3 other Lions mm-hmm. also got sacks. There's 3 interceptions. You here are the Red Blacks coming into this game. You know, they have all the starters on the offensive line. So how do they have this many turnovers? How do they get sacked this many times to a team that came into this game 7th in interceptions, 7th in sacks? How does this mm-hmm. happen? Well, you put all the blame naturally on that line and on your quarterback, right? But, Joe, what was up with Dominique Davis starting the second half?
I couldn't tell you. Really? Considering how long he was in Winnipeg and how desperate the Bombers have been over the past few years to have any sort of creditable backup. Mm-hmm. For the Bombers to let him go should have told Ottawa something, and it didn't seem to that message didn't seem to get received. Trevor Harris is their chance to win games. When he's cold, they're not going to win games. But Dominique Davis is also not going to win games for you. So you might as well take a shot at Harris finding himself in the second half.
Especially since this was the thing. especially since, you know, on your first play from scrimmage, you know, your starting center goes out for the Lions, right? So Cody Husband, he's gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You lose Travis Lule later in the game, okay? All the Lions have taken in the first half is a rouge, right? They got rouged once. So it was 10-1 at half, right? How does the coaching staff not have enough confidence in Trevor Harris that he can't score two touchdowns, that he can't put together maybe three scoring drives with a couple of field goals in there? How? Completely wild. Now, I'd like to go back to you, Dr. Roosh. You made a comment earlier, BC Lions have been under the radar all this season. It's because they haven't been that good.
Precisely.
How much of this defensive play, how much of that is simply this insane schedule? You know, where again, you got to play at what is your time, 10 p.m. at night, out there on the West Coast. How much of it is simply that?
I don't think you can look past it. You know, especially because, as you said a couple of minutes ago, late night home games, they are darn near unbeatable. Everywhere else, they are almost perfectly beatable. So I think that is certainly, you know, one of the issues there in terms of game time and that sort of thing.
Couldn't give this game away. They couldn't give this game away.
And that's the thing. And that's the thing. If you're Ottawa, you can't lose a game like this.
No.
is a winnable game against a team that on paper you are better than, and you lay a rotten egg, and, you know, there goes first place, and, you know, you may not get first place back. You know, Ottawa and Hamilton have that back-to-back set, and I think it's weeks 19 and 20, which probably will decide the Eastern Division. But the reality is you had a two-game lead over everybody.
Yeah.
And now you're tied and you're going in the wrong direction.
Yeah. You got it locked up, and then you lose to Montreal and then you lose to BC. Let me just get one more in here, and then I'll give this one to Joe, then we can move on. Okay, so let me ask you this. After BC went up 7-0, let me ask you this, Joe. Did you think that Ottawa was going to come back and win this game? Because I just did not. I just had no faith in them.
I wanted to see a little bit more out of them early, but once I didn't get it, I also hopped on a plane around halftime, so I didn't get to see the rest of it.
Okay.
But I once it was 10-1 at halftime, I just figured they were done. Okay. I didn't have any faith in them popping back, but their chances are better if they have Harrison and he finds himself rather than giving up. Is what they're doing when they put Davis in. Unless they were so afraid for Harris's health that they figured put Davis in as a sacrificial lamb and roll the dice for next week.
But let's face it. They had Davis out there for one series.
Yeah.
You know, if you're trying to make a statement to your backup or to your starting quarterback that says, hey, look, you stink right now. We're going to put the other guy in and try to light a fire under you. Well, having the other guy out there for like four plays is not going to do it.
Yeah, but didn't he throw a pick?
I think he
did. Wasn't that the thing? Yeah. It's just
I think
like
he did.
Well, okay, that's it. It's like the gong show out there at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bring out this guy. He gets the gong. Okay, he's off. Right. Okay. And so are we. This game's getting the gong now because I really did not enjoy that game very much at all. I did enjoy this game. I'm sure you didn't, Doctor, which is too bad because – wow, quite a performance by the Tiger Cats. Now, this is the Tiger Cats I've been waiting for since the preseason. Let's move on. Since we were still hashtagging, is it June yet? Again, the story I think for the Tiger Cats in this game is that offensive machine. They got that human triangle going on with Brandon Banks and Luke Tasker. Okay, so in this game, I've got their stats as combining again for three touchdowns on 13 passes and 244 yards. And it's not just them. Alex Green has become a viable weapon in the backfield.
Okay, you've said enough.
104 total yards, one touchdown.
Move on to the next game. Move on to the next game.
All right, should we move on to the next game? Joe, what do you want to get in on this game?
For Hamilton, I would say we're still – trying to figure out who Jeremiah Mazzoli is. He is putting up some fantastic numbers. He is starting to earn the respect of CFL fans everywhere. It's hard for me to put him in the top two quarterbacks of the league here, but at the same time, he's showing everything but maybe a final game or end of the game finisher too for me to be completely convinced here. But he is doing everything he can in this past basically full season to say, hey, I belong here. I'd love to see him pull out a playoff game. I'd love to see him take his team on his back when the chips are down. But and if he does that, he's definitely right. You could start saying his name next to Mitchell and Riley. And right now, he's making every argument he can for people to do that even before that.
Okay, considering that one of those two guys you just mentioned literally put in the best CFL fantasy performance of all time, I believe, last weekend. Yeah, I don't think Masoli's in that conversation yet. We'll definitely
not talking yet, about it. But we're going to be – but if he keeps going like this, he's going to be there.
Oh, yeah.
An important point about Masoli, I mean, all kidding aside, that obviously he whacked Toronto twice in 6 days. You know, if you remember about a month ago, he was in a sort of Trevor Harris funk, and there was a lot of questions. You know, did they get rid of Manziel too soon? Are they sure this is the guy? Very quietly, without drawing a lot of attention to himself, without saying something stupid on social media, you know, he turns around and he's put in three consecutive really strong games. And to me, I think that Riley and Masoli are the two guys that are probably guaranteed 5,000-yard passing plateau guys this year. No, that doesn't mean Mazzoli's in Riley's elite level or Bo Levi Mitchell's elite level. But let's not forget that he could have said, all right, you know what? Maybe I'm not as good as I think. Maybe this team's not as good as I think. He kept his mouth shut and went out and played every week doing his best. And he has come out of that lull and that funk. And so has this team. And again, it's a little early to talk about getting hot at the right time because you're better off week 17, 18 and sort of carry that into the playoffs. But they've got the team that at least consistency wise, I think can really win the Eastern Division somewhat convincingly. And that could mean a ticket to the Grey Cup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's starting to look more and more like that. Right. Okay. So let's move on to the next one that I'm sure we're going to have to bleem by really quickly as well. Saskatchewan Roughriders 32, Winnipeg Blue Bombers 27. Saskatchewan wins the Banjo Bowl, wins the home and home back-to-back series, Labor Day and Labor Day follow-up. Joe, I've got a positive spin for you on this game.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
Okay, here, ready for this? The Bombers defense shut out the Riders offense. Rough Riders defense and special teams, 32 points, 0 points from the Riders offense. What a show. 5 interceptions. I don't mean to rub this in, Joe, but wow. This was a heck of a game from somebody who didn't have a pony in the race, man. 5 interceptions, including 2 pick sixes, plus 6 field goals and 2 extra points for Mr. Lautner. 32 points for the defense. Wow. I can't remember the last time I saw so many points scored. You know, we've been looking at this Bombers team all season and saying, if they have a problem, it's because the defense is allowing too many big plays, too many points, but the offense can keep up. Well, in this one, the Bombers offense helped the Saskatchewan Roughriders keep up, let's just say. Now, in this game, of course, the Strevolution came back. He started the second half. Joe, last week you said you wouldn't replace Nichols even after a bad game in this game. How do you feel about this decision?
It needed to be done. Okay. A bad game is one thing. 3 interceptions throughout the course of a game is one thing. But he could have thrown 10. There was at least 2 or 3 that were just off the defender's hand and just dropped. There was a couple more that came back by penalty or review. And then there was the three he actually threw, and one, and you know, one of them was just a gift. It was like, here, have the ball and go run the other way. was probably the worst half I've ever seen a quarterback of one of my teams play. And I've seen Drew Willey play quarterback. So,
Strevelin threw a couple. I mean,
Strevelin threw a few picks, and they were more of the, I feel like I need to do something. I'm going to take a gamble that I shouldn't take. But Nichols was just, here, have the football. Strevelin was trying to make plays, and it seemed like Nichols was just, oh, look, a green, here, have it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to aim for the triple coverage. I'm going to aim for the defender standing, you know, 5 feet away from me and nobody in between him and the end zone. That was not the response I was hoping to see out of Nichols. People like to call him a game manager, but that was not a well-managed game.
Yeah, he did not manage that well. Yeah, exactly. Okay, Doc, I'd like you to weigh in, especially on the Riders side, but specifically this. I think that in a week when the Stampeders defense gave up six touchdowns to one man.
Mm-hmm.
Over there in Edmonton. Do the Riders now officially have the best defense in the CFL?
I think a strong case can be made that they do. I think that, you know, I think all of us agree that Calgary was on a roll in roughly weeks 2 through 7 or so that, you know, look, if they continued that through the entire season, it was going to be the greatest defensive effort that any team across the season had ever put in. They were going to go 18-0. They were going to win the West. They were going to go 19-0. They were going to win the Grey Cup. They were going to go 20-0. No questions asked. What is striking to me is that, you know, not only have in the last couple of weeks they looked bad, but they've looked either a little bit tired or a little bit slow. At least my perception. Again, you watch on TV, that may or may not be, you know, a good way to sort of evaluate, but this team that seemed to be able to make every right decision and every right play, you know, in the first part of the season, they're not making that now. Mm-hmm. Where in Saskatchewan, there was never a moment where you thought, wow, Saskatchewan might shut you out. You know, I think there was a feeling early in the season that Calgary could shut you out. While I don't think anyone looks at Saskatchewan and says, yeah, they're going to shut somebody out, I think Saskatchewan right now is like, you know, if you get 20 off this team, you had one heck of a good night. If they're not the best in the league, they're certainly very, very close to being the best. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Who do you like, Joe? Best defense in the league?
I'll still take Calgary because, point of order, the Bombers have scored more than 20 in the past couple weeks against the Redder defense, even when they were handing them the ball left and right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. I mean, the Bombers still put up 27, gave the Riders literally immediately 12 points, you know, in pick sixes. And wow, still put up 27. So yeah, again, this Bombers offense is still high flying, but I guess it's just too high risk, high reward. Do you believe that Strevler can get this team purring again, or at least this offense, and get them flipping that scoreboard again?
Yes.
I think he could put up a bunch of points, but here's the thing now, too, is that there's more film of him out there than there was in the first couple weeks. Teams will have a better sense of what kind of things they need to do to stop him. Mm-hmm. I think he's more likely to make the backbreaking mistakes than Nichols would, the first half of this last week's game notwithstanding. So Nichols is going to be probably the best option going forward if he can keep his confidence up after these couple of rough outings. Strevler is going to make more plays, but I think he's still more likely to be prone to mistakes.
Okay, now Doc, I know you're a Strevolutionary. Mm-hmm. How good can he make these Bombers? How will these Bombers finish the season? I mean, they're not going
to
be
down.
You believe he's an improvement. So obviously the Bombers are still on that playoff bubble. They're still in the talk.
Sure. You know, to me, it comes down to this. I agree with what both of you are saying in that with Nichols or with Strebler, there's the potential to score 27 or 30 points. I think there's no question about the fact that either quarterback can do that. To me, it comes down to this sort of we believe in this guy. Strebler can do it. He's got that sort of moxie going right now. And part of that is his natural personality. And again, no disrespect to Matt Nichols. He's not one of those naturally, you know, brah, let's go. We can do this. He's much more of a low key, you know, quiet sort of personality. To me, again, they've got the week off. And I think, you know, talk about a bye week coming at the right time. They need a break from all of it. To me, if you start Strebler next week, I think what you're saying to Matt Nichols is your time here is almost over. Because if it goes well, then let's face it, you can't take Strebler out. If it goes poorly and the season goes in the tank, you're probably going to say to Strebler, all right, you know what? We're going to run you for six games to see what we've got with you, to see if you're really going to be our long-term answer. To me, if Matt Nichols doesn't start next week, you know, again, barring an unforeseen injury, a different story. If he does not start next week, to me, that's an indication that his time in Winnipeg is basically over.
He's not.
Yeah, that would be that.
Uh-huh. Is he? Yeah, to me, that would be that. Is he going to start week 15 at home against Montreal?
I would say yes, because it's a winnable game. Remember, Mike O'Shea is incredibly loyal.
Yep.
He probably held on to Drew Willey for a couple weeks too long in 2016 and mm-hmm. was basically forced to go with Nichols once Nichols put up a bunch of points against Calgary in the dying minutes back in, I want to say, week five or six. And Nichols has carried the ball all over to here. I don't think O'Shea's going to do anything on pure emotion. He's going to do what he thinks is best for the team.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not he takes Nichols all the way down or rides Nichols all the way down to the bottom of the sea, that's one thing. We'll see about that if it continues to be a problem, but I don't think he's going to quit on Nichols quite yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. Interesting. Okay. Let's talk about this last one. Before moving on, I don't know what you could say about it. I guess the nice thing about Edmonton Eskimos 48, Calgary Stampeders 42 is if you miss the game, just go and watch the highlight clip. Because basically
it's the whole game.
Yeah, the entire game was a highlight clip. Let's take a look at some of these numbers. Now, if you like defense, you're out of luck. I personally, I'm a defense first guy, so I had a lot more fun watching the Saskatchewan Winnipeg game, sorry Joe, than this one, but this one was a dandy if you like offense. Let's see, I've got in the game 7 passing touchdowns, 5 rushing touchdowns, 1,073 yards of total offense. Now, I believe that was more that was in the Super Bowl over in the American League, which was the highest, the most productive offensive game of all time. Mm-hmm. But I believe this had actually more yardage in it in regular time. And an almost 21-point fourth quarter comeback. Mike Riley, as I said earlier, came away with what has to be the best fantasy game ever by a CFL player. Now, I don't know. I don't play the official CFL-sanctioned fantasy game. So I'm just going by the traditional Yahoo stats, which was the one that I used to play fantasy at for years and years and years and years. But that calculation, that's 90 points. That's 90 points in a game that's usually weighed. If you have a monster game, your team scores like 205. You know, so and this is 90 points on this scale. 3 passing touchdowns, 3 rushing touchdowns, and 440 total yards of offense. I mean, that's insane. That's insane.
Here's the thing. Imagine if this were a Grey Cup game, this would be considered perhaps the greatest Canadian Football League game of all time. It would be in that conversation.
Yes.
90 points, a bazillion yards, you know, guys making big plays all over the place, you know, and, you know, although again, the defense gets lost in a game like this, you know, the sort of key defensive players that you would expect to have a lot of tackles, had a lot of tackles, you know, and just imagine if that last second throw had been caught in the end zone.
Right.
You know, this, we would be talking about this being the best CFL game ever. And the fact that it's, and when I say only a regular season game, it's going to get lost among so many other games. But boy, it was so much fun to watch.
I could make it even better. Let's say he makes that touchdown, and then you miss the extra point, and then yes. You win on a rouge.
And you go into overtime. Yeah. Well, you win with a rouge.
Win on a rouge, 49-48. There you go.
Well, you know, then I would just yeah. be, you know, I might have to retire my CFL fandom at that point and just say, see, I told you so. Oh, nah, drop mic, walk out.
You know? Unfortunately, you can't win by a rouge in overtime because they start you in the red zone in the new overtime rules, right? They do it that way, right? In the regular season in the CFL, mm-hmm. we have not seen an overtime game yet. That's still a standing rule, right, Joe? You start
yep.
in like the red
zone, and you could have a rouge. I mean, you don't move the ball at all. You kick, you try a field goal, you miss it.
That's right. Yep. That's right. Okay, you could. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then just get a bunch of stops. Yeah, okay. 49-48. That would have been awesome. Mm-hmm. Or even 50-49. You get a couple of rouges and then a rouge on the other side. Okay, but – all right, mm-hmm. I don't have very many notes for this game other than those numbers, because to me, this is a pretty indescribable game. Just watch it. Go back and watch it. All I have to say is I wish that this was the game that ESPN2 showed, mm-hmm. you know, this month, because it seems like every time they put a game on ESPN2 or on national TV in America, it's a blowout, you know, at least mm-hmm. until the playoffs. So I wish they had shown this. I don't know. Any takes on this game, Joe? Besides, it was awesome.
You were going on and on about Mike Riley, but the Stamps put up almost 600 yards.
Yeah, they put up more yards.
Gave up 7 turnovers and still had a chance to win at the right. end. If they pull in that Hail Mary, my goodness.
Right. I mean, I love Bo Levy's stats, you know, 4 touchdowns, but 3 interceptions.
And you have to consider that a bad game by the Stamps because they turned the ball over 7 times. Mm-hmm. And they still almost beat Mike Riley doing that.
Well, it's like the Bombers, right? I mean, here they are. They turned it over 7 times and they still scored 42 points. Right? I mean, obviously this offense can put up a lot of points. I was not too surprised at this number because, again, like last week, and we sort of talked about this last week they played this really grinded out, lots of injuries, lots of digging in the trenches and whatnot. And I remember thinking to myself, man, they cannot play again like this. They're going to have to air it out next week. And sure enough, that's what happened. Any last thoughts for you on this game, Doc?
As good as the game was the week before, you know, the game the week before had almost a playoff feel to it.
Yeah.
Meaning the Labor Day game had an almost playoff like feel to it. This one was just one of those where, again, if it had been a Grey Cup game, you know, it would have been, I remember this play. Yeah, but that play. But did you remember this? You know, we'd be talking about that game for 20, 30 years. An absolutely sensational game.
Absolutely. Right. Well, let's talk next week's games. We got to get going on this podcast. It's getting too long, and I have to start making dinner. So I'm going to start prepping dinner, and let's take a break. And we'll be right back. CFL podcast. I'm Oz Davis. I'm here with Dr. Rouge. I'm here with Joe Pritchard. We're going to talk next week's game. Short schedule next week.
So, wait. We got one question, Oz.
What's for dinner?
You said you were prepping dinner. Should we come over?
You think you can get here in time?
Probably not. I mean, Southern California traffic, we'd get there and then it'd take us another 15 years to get to you.
Right, exactly. Even if you got here by Star Trek teleporter technology, you'd still have to get through traffic. It's still taking too long. Yeah, it's insane. They'll not even in the 25th century do they have a solution to Los Angeles traffic. I am convinced.
I actually have a question too. Oh. I see a big plume of smoke to my west. What did you do?
During that break, come on, Joe. You
LA
know
Fire Department or the Orange Fire Department, Anaheim Fire Department, they call them all, huh?
All I can say is in the last election, a certain ballot measure was passed and a certain consumable good is now 100% legal. Okay, so all I can say is that if I were doing anything that would cause a plume of smoke, I would have nothing to worry about legally. Plus, there is exactly one actual benefit to having glaucoma, and that is it. In any case, let's talk the games next week. Let's not talk my personal habits. My Montreal Alouettes put their 3 weeks without a loss on the line at home against the BC Lions. Now, the BC Lions are a 3-point favorite in this game. I think Antonio Pipkin and the Montreal Alouettes are being disrespected a little bit. What do you think, Doctor?
Oh, they're being disrespected a little bit. There's no question about it. To me, this is, you know, again, I don't like the phrase must win, but I think the loser of this game, especially if it's Montreal, you know, playoff hopes are done at that point, because now you're talking about being 3 and 4 games behind BC, presuming that BC or Winnipeg, you know, will be that crossover team. I've gone back and forth with this game. You know, on the one hand, it's now it's BC who's making the long trip and, you know, their body clock is sort of all thrown out of whack. I'm going to say Montreal wins this game.
I mean, yeah, BC is playing on the short week, relatively, right? They've got the shortest week in the CFL this week, right? So, you know, they're playing on the short week. Montreal's had the bye week. This goes off at 4:30 BC time. Okay, so that's not unreasonable. Okay, Joe, what do you like?
Are we all going to pick Montreal? Is that a thing that's going to happen on this podcast this season?
Wow. I don't know. Are you going to pick Montreal?
I almost should just because of that, but I see no reason to pick against Pipkin right now because he hasn't shown us a lot to be afraid of at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I see no reason to pick BC Lions on the road. So especially with Montreal having the bye week, until they win on the road, I'm not picking them on the road. Especially, I'll definitely take the +3 for Montreal if they happen to lose in a close one. But. All right, on Saturday, it's the Calgary Stampeders, who are a just 1.5-point favorite at Hamilton Tiger Cats, possibly the hottest offense in the league. Joe, what do you say?
This is going to be one of those games I was talking about for Jeremiah Mazzoli. You've got a chance to go into first place on your own. You've got the best defense in the league across from you. Put up. I think he's going to have a pretty good game. I do think Calgary's going to win because I don't see I still need to be convinced that they're mortal after that kind of performance. 7 turnovers and still almost beating Edmonton in Edmonton? Yeesh. I'll take Calgary. Thank you very much right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and oddly enough, Masoli's record, I believe, is worse at home than on the road, at least for the last couple of years. All right, Doctor, what do you think? Calgary Stampeders, 1.5-point favorites at home.
Yeah, I'm with Joe. To me, you know, I look at Calgary, and yeah, I agree. They are not, you know, they are beatable. It takes a certain kind of team to beat them. And, you know, we know Saskatchewan can be that team. We know Edmonton can be that team. But those are two of the supposed other stacked teams in the West. I'm not yet convinced that a team out of the East is going to beat Calgary. Saying that, these two teams played, you know, opening weekend. It was a pretty darn good game for the opening weekend of a season. You know, and Calgary's defense found a way to make that play to sort of lock in the win. Wouldn't surprise me if we see the same thing this week where, you know, somebody has a fumble, somebody has an interception, and, you know, Calgary manages to hold on to something like a 23-21 win, you know, something very close.
Well, the only way that or the best way, I should say, that the Calgary Stampeders would truly show fallibility is to lose two in a row. Mm-hmm. They haven't lost two meaningful games in a row in a long time on this run that they've enjoyed in the past 5-6 years now. Long time. Bo Levi Mitchell's entire career, at least. So, but I don't know. Are they that fallible right now? Hamilton is probably the hottest team in the league. All right, I'll be contrary. I'll take Hamilton. I don't feel good about taking either team in this game. I think this is going to be a great game. Oh, and by the way, I should point out that this is my Grey Cup preview from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, I'm glad you guys remember because it's looking better and better all the time. Finally, on Sunday, we'll have Ottawa, 5-point underdogs. Probably should be more at Saskatchewan. I'm going Saskatchewan. They're the hottest team in the league. They're the first team to win 4 games in a row that's not named the Calgary Stampeders this season. I think they make it 5. I'll take Saskatchewan, Joe.
All logic dictates that the Riders are going to win this one. They're at home. They've got Ottawa going west. And Ottawa is in one of their swoons. But every time I think I have this Ottawa team pegged, they do the exact opposite. So I'm taking Ottawa.
Okay, Doc. What do you think?
Hey, I mean, look, we know Saskatchewan with Zach Collaros at quarterback is a heck of a different team than with Zach Collaros not at quarterback. Presumably, he has had no trouble with concussion protocol this week, but this is his second concussion of the season. I'm presuming Zach Collaros is going to start. One either really good hit or one not so good hit. If it knocks him out of the game, that turns the complexion of this game around. But I think Saskatchewan's defense, much like Calgary's, I think will make that one play when it counts. And Saskatchewan will find a way to hold on. Well, maybe not hold on, but they'll find a way to win this game by something in the neighborhood of 4 to 7 points, depending upon, you know, where we are at the late stages of that game.
Well, I'm surprised. I'm surprised that, like, okay, for example, you don't mind who the wide receivers are in Hamilton, but you're concerned about the quarterback in Saskatchewan. You know, this hasn't been Caleros' team in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
What I liked in the last game, and what I think is going to be the X factor coming down the stretch, I've been looking at this dude for 3 or 4 weeks now, is Trey Mason. Trey Mason went for – he did not score a touchdown last week, but he did go for 6 yards a carry on 20 carries, which is by far the most he's had the ball in one game this season. I think Jones has been bringing him along slowly on purpose because I think this dude's going to start breaking it out and start dominating, you know, in the way that your guy did last season at the end of the year.
I can get behind that idea.
Yeah, I think that's – I mean, Caleros hasn't had a passing touchdown now, I believe, in 3 weeks, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't have one against either of the Winnipeg games.
You know, to me, as you look at this week's game, Caleros starting is as close to the guarantee of a winning team that we have among the 3 games this week. You know, we look at BC Montreal, could go either way in reality.
Right.
We look at the Calgary Hamilton game, could go either way in reality. If Zach Caleros plays, Saskatchewan probably wins. If he doesn't, it's a toss up like the other 2 games.
Yeah, but Joe says this game could go the other way.
Could.
Joe says this game could go either way.
He's right about saying Ottawa is impossible to figure out.
I don't think they're that impossible. Here's what I think. They're disappointing. You know, if they'll find a way to disappoint you, they will this season. You know, I mean, they'll score 42 points and lose. You know, I mean, that's just.
Actually, they scored 41 and lost.
Sorry.
Not that somebody was watching the scoreboard that night. No, I'm just hypothetically saying they could score 41 and lose.
Yeah, they could score 41 in the best game of the season until last weekend and lose. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, come on. So anyway, all right, Doc, I let you go first to start the show. Why don't you go first to end the show?
To end the show,
take us out of here.
To me, I think that, you know, we're now looking at teams that not just Hamilton and its quarterback, not just Ottawa and its quarterback. It really is getting to be put up or shut up time. You know, for Saskatchewan, it's okay. You've had a great run. You may not necessarily catch Calgary, but you got to keep the pressure on them all season long. You know, it for Calgary, you've been the best team all season long. Are you going to maintain that? You know, it really is now getting to the time of the season where, you know, as the regular season games get fewer, losses are magnified, wins are magnified. I still am comfortable with your prediction of a Calgary-Hamilton Grey Cup, but it's predicated on those teams proving it. And again, they play each other this week, obviously, but they've got to prove it over the last 7 weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe we're two-thirds of the way done here. Pretty soon we're going to have to break out the hashtag, is it October already? All right, Joe, what do you say? Bring us out of here.
Doc, did you seriously forget it was podcast day until 15 minutes before the show?
True story, all right?
Wow, no kidding.
True story. I had a long day at work, and I was reading a magazine and just sort of, you know, winding down and whatever. And I had one of those, I forgot something today. What did I forget today? And I went, oh, shoot! You know, and I looked at the clock, and it was 7:44, and I thought, oh, for crying out loud. I almost forgot, and Joe, say it with me. If it's Wednesday...
It's podcast day.
And I almost forgot. It's a true story.
Wow, you are breaking my heart, Doc. I can't believe this. Seriously, I think about this show on and off for 5 days to the point where when we're done, it feels like Friday. Honestly. No joke. I'm not obsessed, but I do think about it on and off and think about all the clever witticisms I'm going to drop on this show. Speaking of clever witticisms, we'll go back to Joe.
So, Doc, you know what that means, right? Monday morning, 8 a.m., my office.
Box of shame. Yes, yeah. I got to go to your office for a change. Yes.
Way to call him out, Joe.
Thanks, Joe. Who loves you, baby? Thanks a lot.
I figure after all the times you tortured me this year,
nice.
It was my turn.
Nice. Yeah, believe me, that list is like 905 to 1.
Yeah, that's about right.
Or the score of the average Argos game these days.
Yep, about right. So I guess I have to catch up, don't I?
This is true.
Right. And on that note, as they say, we'll wrap the Rouge White Blue CFL podcast for this week. My name is Oz Davis, and for my co-host Joe Pritchard and Dr. Rouge, the man who never met a single point he didn't like, we are out of here for this week. Enjoy the games. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter. We'll be right back.